at The Letters, Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast with Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson-Smith.
It's at The Letters for Tuesday, November 24th on Sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. My name is Arden Zwelling. I am joined, as always, by Ben Nicholson-Smith, and we're going to change it up on you this week. We're going to get right into the guest off the top. We have Susan Slusser of the San Francisco Chronicle along with us today, and she's going to talk to us about Jesse Chavez. She'll talk to us a bit about Josh Donaldson, a bit about Brett Laurie, perhaps. Lots of fun stuff with Susan. And then after that, Ben and I are going to break down what's happened in what's been somewhat of a quiet offseason so far for the Toronto Blue Jays. We'll talk about the Jesse Chavez acquisition. We could talk about the David Price rumors, which run rampant at all times. The Marco Estrada deal, Devin Travis injury. Plenty to chew on there. All that and much, much more coming up on this week's edition of At The Letters.
And that'll do it. Did I say that'll do it, meaning that's a new career high. 10 strikeouts for Jesse Chavez. Man, is he mowing along tonight.
And look at the movement on this pitch. Again, two-seam fastball moving down and away. So you got the cutter going in. This two-seamer going down and away.
It continues on At The Letters. Arden Zwelling with Ben Nicholson-Smith on Sportsnet.ca and iTunes. Please like, share, favorite, and subscribe. We are very happy to be joined by Susan Slusser of the San Francisco Chronicle. Susan, how are you?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Great. I want to start off with something that you tweeted after the Blue Jays acquired Jesse Chavez about a conversation you had with Josh Donaldson this summer when the A's were in Toronto, and you mentioned that, you know, Josh would probably be happy about this deal because he told you that he hoped the Blue Jays were going to get a guy like Chavez. What can you just give us a bit more background on that conversation and what went down there?
Yeah, you know, because the A's were in just a little bit before the trade deadline this year, and everybody knew that there was a lot of interest in Jesse Chavez around the league. That was certainly no secret. And the Blue Jays, I think, were looking for a pitcher at that point, and Donaldson said, oh, man, I really hope that somehow we can wind up getting Chavez. I know he'd put in big recommendations with everybody. But it's funny because almost every place the A's went, if that team was in the race and needed a pitcher, like I remember some of the Dodgers telling me, oh, man, I hope we get Jesse Chavez. So this is a guy that you look at his numbers and you might wonder why there's so much fuss about him. But when you see him on a regular basis, first of all, he's a toothpick, but he's a bulldog. So it's a skinny guy who's just given his all, and he's so versatile. He can fill almost any role. I think he did, except for closer when he was in his 3 years with the A's, and really gets off to these incredibly hot starts. I remember 2 years ago, there were A's pitchers who were saying, this guy's going to win the Cy Young this year. He got off to such a hot start, but he's so thin, he's so slight, you know, he kind of wears down in the second half. That's really the only knock on him, but he is a team guy and his teammates love him. Very few players that are as popular team-wide as Jesse Chavez.
So, Susan, you mentioned he's a popular guy. What is it about Jesse Chavez that allows him to really connect with those teammates, and why is he such a popular guy in the clubhouse?
Well, you know, it's funny because a lot of times pitchers kind of stick with pitchers, and he's very friendly. So he was friends with everybody, as you can probably tell from Donaldson being so on board with him. Great demeanor, always in a good mood, really a battler, very competitive. Everyone appreciates that. A pitcher who kind of does everything right on the mound, position players appreciate that, fields his position, never wants to come out of the game, guys. Love that. With the pitchers, very specifically, they loved him because it's like having a second pitching coach. Jesse Chavez is probably the best active player I've ever seen at being able to spot flaws in other pitchers' deliveries and also make suggestions to them about things that might work with their repertoire. I think maybe you want to pick up a slider, or you should think about a changeup. And he's got different grips. He's been around so long. He's bounced around so many places. He's worked with so many pitching coaches. He kind of knows like every grip and every circumstance in which, you know, something might work for a guy. Doing this might get you a little action. You know, I'm seeing a little hitch. Maybe you should try coming over the top more. He talks pitching nonstop. And I swear, almost every little suggestion he's made to A's pitchers over the years, they've wound up just raving about it. So this is a guy who's got a great future as a pitching coach, for one. But he's such an asset in the clubhouse for that reason alone, along with being a great team guy.
Sounds a lot like what Josh Donaldson does for the hitters, and certainly what we've experienced with him is, you know, every day you go into that clubhouse and you see him working on, you know, a swing path adjustment with a guy, or, you know, talking to somebody about hitting, things like that. It sounds very similar to that.
Yeah, the A's are just going to keep trading the Blue Jays, all their great clubhouse guys who help everybody and are incredible assets. Yeah, it's a little weird, but yeah, he's a good one. And this trade made sense for both teams, I think. I know there were some Toronto fans who were like, oh man, we're trading a really top-notch reliever for a guy whose numbers you look at, maybe you're not overwhelmed. But Jesse Chavez, as I just said, gives you so much. And then from the A's perspective, Chavez is getting expensive. He's only got 1 year left before free agency, and their bullpen was a disaster last year. So this is really potentially one of those deals that could help both teams out enormously. And hey, if it winds up airing a little bit on the A's side, I think the A's will take it at this point from the Blue Jays. I think the Blue Jays might owe them a little bit.
Yeah, I think we're all just surprised the A's are even willing to trade with the Blue Jays ever again. You know, you're mentioning that the numbers don't overwhelm you. And I mean, certainly the stuff with Jesse Chavez probably doesn't overwhelm you at all. He doesn't have a very, you know, overwhelming fastball or anything like that. But what does he do on the mound to, you know, keep hitters off balance? And what kind of a repertoire can Blue Jays fans expect to see?
Well, everything moves. He keeps the ball down. He's got fantastic control. When he's on, his stuff is actually pretty nasty. And he can hit low 90s. He'll surprise you. Again, really the only issue with him is the fact that he tends to wear down in the second half, sometimes a little bit in games early on, just because he tries so hard to put on weight, and he can in the off season, but the second season starts, you know, it just comes off with activity. So, you know what, when he was with the Rangers, they actually gave him a personal nutritionist who lived with him. He put on like 20 pounds that off season, and then it all immediately came off when he started running and throwing bullpens and stuff during the spring. So that's really it. But the stuff is actually really pretty good. Better, again, this is a guy where you might see him on television and go like, nah, looks mediocre. It's actually really, really pretty good. He's deceptive.
At what point did Chavez kind of have everything click? Because we saw him here in Toronto in 2012. He was really not having a lot of success, and he bounced around a whole lot earlier in his career, and it's only really been in the last few seasons with the Athletics that he has put it together. So have you figured out if there was any one thing or some combination of things that allowed him to take his game to another level?
Well, it was two things. His cutter got a lot better, which I think that was a key. He uses that a lot. When it's good, you know, it's really a pitch that has worked really well for him. But the main thing, and he has said this many times, when he came from Toronto to Oakland, he was just awful with Oakland the rest of the way. And they left him on the 40-man. And that was an off-season. The A's had lots of moves. And those of us that pay close attention to the A's kept going, why is Jesse Chavez look terrible? Why is he still, they're leaving him on the roster over a guy like Travis Blackley, who'd been very, very helpful for the A's that year when they made their playoff run. And he said that really gave him confidence. And he bounced around so much, his confidence was really shot. The A's kept saying, we want you here. We believe in you. We think you can start. We think you can really be an asset. And it was that confidence, and also just staying in one place for a while. He kind of felt settled. He felt comfortable. You guys know a lot of guys come to Oakland when they have bounced around and feel like they haven't gotten a real shot somewhere, and they feel kind of at home, because the A's really are good at giving sort of fringy type players a place to show what they have and blossom. And that's what happened with Jesse Chavez, confidence and feeling like somebody believed in him.
I think he was, you know, he was much better at home last year, as most guys are going to be when they pitch in Oakland. I mean, what do you make of, you know, him moving to more of a hitter's ballpark, and how his stuff might play at Rogers Center?
Well, I think that will be an issue, frankly. But he's a sharp guy. He's a savvy guy. It would not surprise me at all if he throws some wrinkles in, and if he pitches pretty differently there. But yeah, that could be, you know. Certainly the pitching at the Coliseum has helped him. Another thing to look at with Jesse Chavez is almost his entire time with Oakland, he was the guy that got virtually no run support. He's going to get run support with the Blue Jays, and you know how much that can settle down a pitcher. you settle down a little bit when, you know, guys put up early runs for you, I think he won't necessarily miss pitching into the Coliseum quite so much if he's getting decent run support, which will be a first really for him.
Going back to Donaldson for a second, I wanted to ask you, because you covered him and you know him, were you surprised to see him come to Toronto and have this much success? And do you think the A's were surprised at all to see him win the MVP?
I thought he would have a good season, certainly, and I thought he was going to be one of the better third basemen in the league. I don't think anybody would necessarily say a guy is going to go somewhere and be MVP. But, you know, you look in that lineup and you go, like, maybe there's, you know, maybe Bautista is a guy who might be the MVP. And, I mean, you know, they've got several candidates in that lineup with all those sluggers. But I think we all know how competitive Josh Donaldson is and his drive to be the best. He's incredibly ambitious in both a team sense, which is great, and in a personal sense. He wants to be the best. So with those circumstances and taking advantage of having great guys in the lineup around him, I mean, he was fantastic. So, you know, all credit to him, but I don't think anybody would ever say, yeah, they've just traded a guy who'll probably be MVP. Certainly the A's wouldn't have said that. I think they knew what they had, but maybe not quite to that extent.
He was certainly caught off guard by the trade when it happened, as I think the entire baseball world was. It just didn't seem like a kind of asset that you would really move at that point. And, you know, I think it probably took him just a little bit of time to, you know, get used to being a Toronto Blue Jay and to find his feet. But when you spoke to him this summer, I mean, what did he tell you about playing in Toronto or about how he was fitting in with this club?
Oh, he loves it. I mean, hey, how could you not? I mean, such a strong team, you know, very good teammates. I think you guys know that Bautista was a guy he'd actually modeled his swing on. So a little bit of a, you know, fan kind of thing with Bautista. And he took it and ran with it. So I think he's thrilled. How could you not be? And the city seemed like they really took to him and kind of get him. And not everybody does. He's a guy who opposing teams often dislike. I'm sure you guys saw that. He gets pretty heated. He's got a little flash. His mom says he's a guy that has always been like that. The opposing team has always kind of hated him. But I think Toronto fans really got him and the level of competitor he is. So, yeah, he seems comfortable. Obviously seems comfortable there. Sounds silly to even suggest otherwise.
Yeah, definitely won over a lot of fans here in Toronto. Before we let you go, Susan, we wanted to ask you as well about Brett Laurie. He's obviously someone that Blue Jays fans embraced at the beginning of his tenure here in Toronto. And by the end of the season in Oakland, he had 16 homers. And it seemed like a solid season from the outside looking in.
Yeah, it's interesting. That trade, obviously, if you look at it in the aftermath, it looks like, you know, a bad one for the A's. But still, they got four players. One of them's young. Laurie did have a decent season. I feel kind of bad for the guy because fans certainly in Oakland are always going to be comparing him to Donaldson. They play the same position. Although Laurie, I think his future in Oakland is probably more second base if they keep Danny Valencia, which I think they will. I think it took a long time for him and the entire team after 9 trades last season, to come together. I think nobody felt like there was a good, comfortable fit in the clubhouse. And I think everybody would tell you that. And once he started feeling comfortable a little bit more toward the end, I think he started feeling better. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the coming years with Brett Laurie and how he does. That said, the A's certainly like making moves. I hear there's interest in Brett Laurie from teams, the fact that he can play second and third. Wouldn't stun me if maybe he moves on this offseason.
That's interesting. You mentioned that fit in the clubhouse and how maybe it, you know, it didn't go that smoothly. I think a lot of fans in Toronto gave Brett Laurie quite a bit of rope, him being Canadian, and, you know, he was acquired for Sean Markham, who became nothing. So it was quite a win of a trade when he was brought in. And I think a lot of fans were surprised to see him go. But, you know, kind of behind the scenes, you know, he was a guy who was in the manager's office quite a bit. He was a guy who, you know, I don't think the club was that happy with his attitude or his behavior. How did you find him kind of evolve and him behind closed doors throughout this year?
Honestly, you know, you hear things like that. I think he actually really behaved himself pretty well. You probably remember, and certainly the Blue Jays had some issues with the Royals too during the season. The A's had like a series at Kansas City in which Laurie was in the middle of a lot of sort of bad blood and tension, and he behaved really well. I mean, it really kept his cool. And we were all surprised because we thought he was very hot-headed. I think the thing that he does, and people have always told him, if he goes at such an extreme rate, people have always said you need to dial it back just a little bit. You'd be a better player. I don't know if he's capable of that. I think the A's saw that too. He's just too revved up. He needs to, you know, just bring it down just a notch. And I think that can be a little bit of an issue. He's almost too hard charging. Something you'd like to see, but maybe not quite to that extent. And I think that's something the A's would love to see change, but I don't think it will. I think he's been like that before. He's just like that. You guys know.
Yeah. I certainly agree with you there. I think Brett Laurie is Brett Laurie.
Yeah.
100 miles an hour, and he's always going to be. So, you know, it can be a little bit of a distraction. I don't think that that's a... I think the Blue Jays people would probably agree with that, too.
Well, great insight, Susan. Thank you so much for joining us. Everyone should follow Susan on Twitter, at Susan Slusser. Read her stuff for the San Francisco Chronicle, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Susan.
Fantastic. Thanks, guys.
McCann strikes out. That's strikeout number 7 for David Price. Nine goes after the pitch, pops it up out in front of the mound, and smoke comes over David Price. 7 innings of 3-hit shutout ball.
Our thanks to Susan Slusser for joining us. Please follow her on Twitter at Susan Slusser, reader in the San Francisco Chronicle. She's excellent. She's working on a cool story right now about, I probably shouldn't say what it is about, but she's working on a pretty cool feature. She's telling us off air, something that you're going to want to read. Hey, it's Ben Nicholson Smith here with me, Arden Swelling. What's up, man?
Not too much. What's going on?
I'm throwing for a loop today because we're doing it backwards.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
Everything thrown off, a new off-season sked, I guess.
It is very weird. Something else is weird. Nothing has happened. And so we didn't do one last week because there has been nothing to talk about. By this time last year, the Martin thing had happened. The Donaldson thing was like right about to happen. At this time this year, we've got Marco Estrada and Jesse Chavez.
You know what's kind of funny is as much as Blue Jays fans are kind of waiting for these big moves to happen, Blue Jays fans have actually had more stuff happen than most teams around baseball.
True.
You know, you look at acquiring Chavez, re-signing Marco Estrada, mm-hmm. most teams really haven't had anything happen.
Yeah, in a way, the Blue Jays have added two pitchers. Well, you know, one of them was here last year, but I mean, he was not a Blue Jay for a certain amount of time, and now he is again. In a way, the Blue Jays have added two pitchers, not to mention all the front office moves.
Yep.
You know, everything that's happened, with all that. Yeah, it's been, you know, it's weird, eh? Because it's been kind of an active yet quiet. It's been kind of both.
I think it's just because the bar was raised so high as far as what it took to get Blue Jays fans excited. I mean, after a month of winning playoff series and losing playoff series and bat flips and all that kind of thing, it really does pale in comparison, even though the Blue Jays have been much more busy than most of the 30 teams.
Absolutely. I guess we'll start with Jesse Chavez, just acquired for Liam Hendricks last week. And a deal, as Susan Slusser said, a deal that I think probably works out well for both sides. You know, both teams had a need and they filled that need. What do you think of this move? How do you feel about the process of it and where it stands?
Good move.
Yeah.
Not a great move. I don't think that it's the kind of move that is going to win anybody Executive of the Year awards the way the Josh Donaldson trade with Oakland did last year this time. But, you know, realistically, the Blue Jays needed some depth in their starting rotation, and Jesse Chavez can provide that. So I do think it makes some sense.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the thing that, you know, really attracted the Blue Jays to Jesse Chavez was, you know, the clubhouse elements and, you know, what he brings away, you know, off the mound, kind of what he brings on the 4 days that he's not starting. You know, as Susan talked about, you know, he's like having another pitching coach. You know, it's like having, he brings very similar, you know, kind of intangible elements to what Josh Donaldson brings to a clubhouse. And, you know, it's the kind of guy that you want on your team. And, you know, it was interesting to hear Susan say that, you know, whenever she kind of went around to different teams, you know, kind of coming around the trade deadline, they were all saying, oh, I hope we get Chavez. You know, I hope that's the guy.
For sure. And I think that part of that, like you said, has to do with that ability to communicate and talk pitching. Part of it, too, is that he's taken huge strides as a pitcher in the course of the last few years. He's legitimately a useful arm to have. And if he gives you 150 innings of an ERA around, you know, let's say 3.9, you take that.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. If he can go out, you know, every 5 days and, you know, give you five and two-thirds, 3-4 runs, I think you're happy. I think that's what you'd like.
That's what he did last year. He averaged 5 2/3 innings to start.
Right. Yeah, 5 2/3 innings start. He had a 4.18 ERA last year. His FIP was 3.85, which suggests that he was maybe a little bit better than his ERA, but, you know, right around kind of that, you know, it's kind of like Mark Burley numbers almost, right? Like, it's kind of similar, very, very different pitchers, but, like, kind of similar where, you know, yeah, he's kind of like a, you know, a five and dive kind of guy.
Yeah, and I mean, Burley's trademark has always been the innings. I don't know that you're going to be able to count on that from Jesse Chavez, and I think this is why the Blue Jays bullpen to me looks like more of a need than it ever has been at any point this offseason, you know, especially having traded Hendricks. And then the guys that you do have, Estrada's a six-inning guy. You know, Stroman, who knows how many innings they're going to want him to go in the course of a full season. I'm guessing it's not 220. I don't know what the number is.
Yeah.
Depending on who else is in their rotation, Drew Hutchison struggles third time through the order. So I think they need a good bullpen. I don't think you want to enter the season with an average bullpen. And right now, their bullpen beyond Asuna, Cecil, and Sanchez looks below average.
That's true. He is absolutely nothing like Mark Burley. As I am showing my rust of like not of not talking about baseball for like 2 weeks, and not even really thinking about it, to be honest with you. This time of year can be so like, can be so arduous with just like the constant rumors and like all the crap and like erroneous reports and like all the, like, you just look at everything that's been said about David Price, you know, and it's just everything out there, and it can weigh on you.
Here's a little sidebar, because you mentioned David Price. What's your whole thought on all these rumors? You know, you see Red Sox linked to him, you see, oh, the Blue Jays linked to him.
David Price says he's pitching in Japan. I believe him. He's going to pitch in Japan. He's going to go get them yen. Who knows is the thing, right? Like, who's to say? You know, like, you, it's interesting. And you hear some people out of Chicago talking very confidently about how, you know, David Price is going to, you know, how Toronto is the front runner for him. It just doesn't seem like it. But like, logically in my head, that doesn't make sense. And that doesn't add up to me.
It doesn't add up. I don't think David Price is coming back here.
Me neither.
I would be very, very surprised if he ends up here.
I as well. Yes. Yeah. And yeah, we've been saying that for a long time.
Right.
But like, but then what makes someone else say so definitively that he would be, right? Like, who is the agent, or who is the, you know, GM, or who's the person who is like, you know, who's trying to affect the market through that person? You know,
it could be any number of people.
Yeah.
Or it could be one of those lost in translation telephone things where, you know, there's a little bit of a breakdown as the gossip spreads from person to person. But I think that David Price certainly enjoyed his time in Toronto here. I mean, he said that time after time. I don't think he ever wavered in saying that he enjoyed his time here. So if someone's taking that and assuming that somehow makes the Blue Jays the front runner, I don't know. I don't think they're the front runner. I don't know that there is one, but if there is, I don't think it's the Blue Jays.
Yeah, and it's so impossible to talk about because, like, unless you are David Price or you are David Price's agent, I mean, you really don't know. It's just no, and there's just nobody, like, there is no concrete evidence of anything out there. For all we know, like, he might, you know, he could have, you know, 5 offers on the table and have no idea which one he's going to take, right? I think that the Blue Jays would, if they were willing to be competitive in terms of dollars and years, that certainly David Price would consider Toronto. Perhaps Toronto would have an edge over other markets just because he likes the staff here and he likes the city and he liked his time here, this and that. But I just don't see the Blue Jays offering a contract of, you know, what it will take to get David Price here.
I agree. I don't see it happening.
Screw that. To get back to Jesse Chavez.
Yes.
Good sidebar. With Jesse Chavez in this, you know, with adding him to the rotation and what you, how you see it kind of stacking up now, you got Marcus Stroman, you got R.A. Dickey, you got Jesse Chavez, Drew Hutchison. Marco Estrada. And then, you know, is Aaron Sanchez going to be a starter? Is Roberto Osuna going to be a starter? I mean, you've got a decent crop of, you know, 6 or 7 guys there that you can kind of play around with. But do they need more?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely they need more.
That was me teeing you up.
Yes, they do. I think that they need someone who can go out there and give them, you know, let's say a couple hundred innings, somewhere close to that. You want someone who's, I don't think they need an ace. I'm not of the school of thought that you need to have an ace at all costs. They're great, but I think that you can get by in other ways. But you do need more than back-end fodder at the same time. So I think they need someone, you know, just to throw some names out there. Does it mean they trade for Jose Quintana or Julio Teheran or Shelby Miller?
Yeah.
Or does it mean that they sign a free agent? You know, Mike Leake, do you look at Wei-Yin Chen? I mean, even if his asking price is high, he's probably just as good as Jordan Zimmermann or close to it. You know, he can pitch in the AL East. And if you can get him for 4 or 5 years, maybe that's not the worst thing. So I think there are a lot of ways they can go. I don't think they're going to be locked in, but I do think they need an arm.
I'd be interested to know what kind of asking prices are on guys, some of the guys available through trade that you mentioned. You had a piece up at sportsnet.ca yesterday about some, you know, some pitchers who could be available in trade. And it seems like there are a lot of teams that, you know, are willing to talk right now and willing to, you know, make some moves and maybe some, you know, when you talk about a Jose Fernandez perhaps being available, right? Like, you know, it's guys that you didn't think would be available possibly are. And I wonder what, you know, what that would cost. And, you know, I wonder if, you know, for certain guys, if you could put together, you know, from a position of depth that the Blue Jays have, like the outfield, if, you know, a Dalton Pompey, Kevin Pillar, guys out there, you know, maybe you package that with, you know, whoever's left in the minor league system, whether it be Anthony Alford or, you know, if Connor Green or, you know, whoever else, you know, Sean Reed Foley, maybe you could put something together to get a controllable guy. And maybe that makes a lot more sense than kind of, you know, shopping in the aisle that is free agency.
Yeah. And I think that even in a really diverse free agent market, I mean, there's something for everyone in this free agent market. You have bounce back guys, you have established guys, you have everything in between. But at the same time, if you are looking for youth, if you're looking for below market salaries, guys who are under extended team control, that can be a tough thing to find in free agency. And at that point, you do start looking at the trade market. Now, if you're talking about someone like Jose Fernandez or Sonny Gray, or I mean, obviously, Corey Kluber, Chris Sale, these guys are getting to the point that they're among the most valuable trade chips in baseball. I mean, pitchers, hitters, anything. These guys have tons of trade value. So in some cases, it's almost going to be a non-starter. But, you know, if you're talking maybe Danny Salazar or Julio Teheran, like I said, these guys aren't quite on that level of the elite. They still have upside. Taijuan Walker, he's not going to be traded by Seattle. But if he were available, he's the kind of guy that you'd want to look at. And maybe you can have that kind of discussion if you're willing to talk about your young guys, particularly those who are close to the major league level.
And I would expect, you know, Tony LaCava and Mark Shapiro, just looking at their track records, to be much more willing to operate that way rather than making a big splash in free agency. You know, and if they can't get something done via trade, maybe you take, you know, the whatever, $25 to $30 million you would have had to pay David Price, and you add a few pieces. You add a bullpen piece. You add, you know, you add a bit of depth, and you add, you know, maybe you can get two starters, right? Like something like that. Like, you know, maybe you can play on kind of that secondary market. It's so hard to talk about. Like, we don't know. But, you know, like, maybe that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. I think one way or another, they need to get more pitching. I think they have to address the bullpen, too. I don't get the sense that they're about to spend aggressively on the bullpen. I think the priority really is the rotation, as it should be. But you know, you look at how many innings relievers are pitching and how few innings a lot of rotations are pitching. I think if you're expecting your bullpen to be pitching 3 and 4 innings a game, you do need to have some really quality guys out there. Doesn't mean you go out and spend $36 million on Darren O'Day, but I do think you need to have some real quality back there.
And, you know, you heard Mark Shapiro kind of make this statement at the owners' meetings that, you know, the depth on this team is somewhat scary, you know, because there kind of isn't, you know, there aren't kind of those players waiting in the wings to step in. You know, like if the Blue Jays suffered, you know, a couple key injuries next season with the crew that they have now, I mean, there really isn't those, you know, those pieces. Like, they don't have that depth, and that is somewhat scary. So, you know, you probably want to have like 7 or 8 guys really that you could count on to start and to start well, so that you're not going to the Felix Dubrons of this world.
Yeah, they have a lot of work to do. And I don't think this sets them apart in any meaningful way from other teams. The Yankees have a ton of work to do. The Red Sox have a ton of work to do. The Dodgers, name a team. At this point in the offseason, when basically every free agent is unsigned and you have a lot of trades that have yet to be made, I mean, there is a lot of work to do for most front offices in baseball. But the Blue Jays are definitely included in that group, and they need to go out and keep doing what they've been doing with these minor league signings, make a waiver claim or two, find a way to find some big league players through trade or free agency who can step into some of those big roles. And doing that's probably going to mean they have to give some players up too, whether it's a guy like Pompey, Pillar, Ben Revere. You know, I'm not sure if all three of those guys end up coming back next season.
Ben Revere is an interesting case because he's going to cost about $7 million. It's estimated through arbitration somewhere in that neighborhood. And, you know, for what he brings, it's, you know, it seems like a lot to pay. And we certainly, what, you know, Blue Jays fans saw of Ben Revere was kind of the best that I think you're going to see of Ben Revere at the end of last season. And, you know, he's a useful player, and he's fine, and he's somewhat, you know, he's okay. But I just, in terms of value, you know, I just don't think he's really worth what he's going to be making. He could be, you know, so could you tender him, you know, could you sign him to a contract and then flip him? Do you just non-tender him straight up? it's an interesting decision to be made. You got to make a contender decision on Michael Saunders as well. I mean, that kind of outfield depth could evaporate rather quickly if you non-tender a couple guys.
For sure. And I think the Revere would have enough trade value where at $6-7 million, you could still get a little bit for him, or at least move him. Saunders, I think, is an interesting decision. I mean, the Blue Jays were expecting to get some medical information on him and how he's shaping up physically. And I do think that that's going to play a role in determining not only whether they non-tender him, but also where he fits into their plans. Is he someone they can depend on? So really, the deadline next Wednesday, December 2nd, that's going to be a make-or-break kind of day for a lot of teams and a lot of players as they progress through their offseason.
Maybe that's when we'll start to see a few things open up, right? Maybe, you know, the Blue Jays have kind of looked at this market and seen that it's been pretty quiet so far. I said, all right, let's wait. Maybe there will be a surprising non-tender somewhere else, right? And somebody will suddenly become available that we can throw some money at.
It also kicks the trade market into action because it's a real deadline for teams. And I mean, you know, baseball teams, it's all deadlines, right? Yeah. So, you know, that's why all the trades in the summer are basically made at July 31st. This almost functions as not a trade deadline, but it's a deadline for decisions. And those decisions lead to a lot of trades. So, you know, you look every year at December 1st, December 2nd, you see tons of trades. And so I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, we're not talking blockbusters here, but it's the kind of mid-level deal that can play a role in shaping a team's winter.
Something that, you know, speaking of medicals and of injuries, Devin Travis had a surgery on his shoulder and he's going to miss the majority of spring training. He's certainly not going to be major league ready for opening day. You know, that's certainly, good news for Ryan Goins, I guess. Devin Travis and Ryan Goins are very good friends. So maybe it's not good news for him in terms of his buddy is hurt, but good news for him in terms of it looks like he has a starting job at second base going into spring training next year, the way things stand now. Something the Blue Jays really need is kind of middle infield depth because Troy Tulowitzki, Ryan Goins, Devin Travis, there's nothing. You know, I mean, if they bring back Munenori Kawasaki, I mean, that he would be your first option. He's basically your bench middle infield guy. So that's something they certainly need to address. You know, you saw them try to address it last year with Ramon Santiago, and that didn't work out very well for anybody. Meister Asturias didn't work out very well for anybody. I mean, that's an area where, you know, the Blue Jays right now are looking really thin.
Yep, I think it's true. I mean, you have a spot on the 25-man roster right now for probably the beginning of the season that you need filled. And, you know, do they bring back Kawasaki? Do they look at a guy like David Adams who they just signed to a minor league deal? Yeah. None of those options are overly convincing. So maybe there's an opportunity there to go out and acquire someone who, you know, like a Cliff Pennington type, someone who's had a lot more experience in the last couple of seasons.
Cliff Pennington's already gone.
Yeah, 2-year deal.
Steve Tolleson already gone.
Yep. They're off the market.
It's funny how those have been kind of the first guys to go is those kind of like depth middle infield guys. Shows you how there's like, it's kind of a surprisingly like valuable like asset to have. The teams kind of covet is having that guy who's okay being the backup and okay playing multiple positions and okay hitting wherever in the lineup and being that kind of dude. That's kind of coveted.
For sure. And I think the same could be said of backup catchers. And I think that's an area that the Blue Jays have to look at as well. You can look at Josh Tolley and Humberto Quintero as a couple options, but Tolley's bat really hasn't played up since he was acquired by the Blue Jays, and I don't think you want him in the lineup 40 times a season, which is what the Blue Jays are going to need as far as giving Russell Martin some rest. And Quintero was a AAA guy last year, so I think he's someone who slots best at Buffalo.
How do you feel about Josh Tolley for next year as the Blue Jays' backup catcher? I take it that you would prefer they upgrade in that position.
I'll put it this way. I think they'll be better off if they upgrade at that position.
What we've seen is that Russell Martin, catching R.A. Dickey affects Russell Martin in a negative sense.
Right.
And we've seen numbers that, you know, suggest that, like, yeah, he doesn't hit well when he's catching him. He gets banged up. He had that thumb injury the whole year from, you know, taking knuckleballs off his thumb. And he can't get in the sweet spot of his mitt. You know, do you think that the drawbacks of Russell Martin's production, the drawbacks to Russell Martin's production from catching R.A. Dickey outweigh having Josh Tolley start 33 times a year plus however many other times he's going to have to start?
You know who else doesn't hit well when he catches R.A. Dickey? Josh Tolley. And I mean that respectfully. Yeah. And that's why I kind of hesitated when you first asked me this question. Yeah. Josh Tolley is a really good guy. He's a professional. And so it's not that I wish for him not to be on the team. It's great if he's on the team. It's good for the media. It's in a lot of ways, that's great. That's a great outcome. But honestly, if the Blue Jays are looking for ways to improve their team, I think the backup catcher would be one of them. If you can find a guy who is defensively capable enough to handle R.A. Dickey, but someone who can bring a little bit more offense. And you look at Tolley the last 3 years in Toronto, He's got a 541 OPS here. You know, you're not looking at a lot of power. He has one home run here in 337 plate appearances. So the bar is set pretty low. Now, that being said, he's a very good defender. So that's one part of his game that you do want to take into account. But, you know, if there is a way, and this is the time when you have a lot of options available in trade and free agency, if there's a way to go out there and acquire someone who can add value on offense and defense, that's something the Blue Jays should look at.
So do you look for a backup catcher who can catch the knuckleball?
Yeah.
And try to take that away from Russ Martin? Because I think that the Blue Jays this year, and like I'm speculating, but I think they probably didn't like the way that catching the knuckleball affected Russell Martin. You know, I think that it hurt him a bit offensively. I think that, you know, he started to kind of, you know, physically the toll, you know, it really took a toll on him throughout the course of the year. We saw them take it away from him, you know, late in the season just to, you know, so that he could kind of get healthy for the playoffs. And I wonder if they'd want to go down that road again next year of having Russ Martin catch Dickey.
Well, I think that the Blue Jays, like a lot of teams, value versatility and value having options open. So if they acquire someone who absolutely can't catch R.A. Dickey, then they're closing themselves off. And anytime that Martin needs a few days off, anytime that if he happens to go on the disabled list at some point next year, which certainly happens to lots of catchers, then they would be really left without a clear option. I guess at that point you call up Toley and you're covered there. But, you know, if they can acquire someone who at least has the ability to work with Dickey in spring training, see what you have there, then that would give them one more option. Russell Martin, of course, would be another option, someone that they could have around to catch Dickey on occasion. But you don't want to have to depend on Martin exclusively.
And that kind of closes off, and talking of options, that closes off a lot of your options when you're bringing in a backup catcher. You know, you're not bringing in D'Aaron Navarro. You know, I doubt Humberto Quintero is going to be catching R.A. Dickey. I mean, you know, you get whittled down to a select number of guys who can catch that knuckleball. So it's an interesting decision in that regard of, you know, do you go with two guys who can catch it? Do you have only one guy that can catch it? You know, how do you, because it really is a consideration.
Right. So where do you land on the Toley question, on the Blue Jays backup catcher question?
I don't know how I feel about it, because you're right. Like he doesn't do anything with the bat. But, you know, I feel like I would be okay with it if Russell Martin's offensive production is going to be affected positively by not having to catch the knuckleball. That kind of maybe helps make up some of that lost offensive production that you get from Josh Toley being in the lineup.
Martin had a good offensive year, though. It's not like we're talking about, you know, a guy who really scuffled at the plate. He had his hot streaks and his cold streaks, but you add it up and it was a very good offensive season.
He did. He slid back from the season he had prior, though. And, you know, some of that is age, but, you know, he's moving to a hitter's friendly ballpark. You know, he didn't take as many walks as he did the year before. He wasn't getting on base. He slugged a bit more. But, you know, it was a step back. And, you know, like you can kind of look at the numbers when Russell Martin caught R.A. Dickey, and in those games he did not perform offensively.
Frankly. No, for sure.
So I wonder if you can, you know, get that little uptick. And we're talking about an all-star catcher, right? So, you know, he's fine, obviously. But, you know, if you can get that little uptick in production. Should we talk about Marco Estrada quickly? Signed a 2-year deal, 26 million dollars. You know, I think it's good for both sides. Good result for both sides. I don't think Marco Estrada is going to get a third year from anybody, especially with draft pick compensation attached to him. I don't know. I was a little bit surprised there wasn't an option on the deal. How did you feel?
Yeah, I think it's a lot like the Chavez deal in a way. I mean, it's a win-win. I think that, you know, you look at the Blue Jays getting 2 years of a pitcher who's a solid pitcher. I don't think that Estrada needs to replicate his 2015 numbers for this deal to be a good one for the Blue Jays. You just got to give them innings. If you can give them, say, 180 innings next year, 30 starts, great. You take that. And I think that as long as the ERA is around 4, something like that, you're happy. So I think it has the potential to be a win-win. And certainly for Estrada, I mean, he had a great season. He was definitely going to cash in, and he did. And it's good to see him come back to a place where he wanted to pitch. And I think can make a real difference here as a good starter. I'm not saying he's going to finish 5th in ERA every year and get Cy Young votes again, but he can be a good starter for this team.
It's a very interesting case study because, you know, it's batting average and balls in play and FIP would suggest that, you know, he outperformed what he should have been this season. But perhaps, you know, he is kind of like that rare case who can kind of bust those numbers. And he's kind of that guy who, you know, if he has great command and if, you know, he mixes his pitches well and works with kind of an intuitive catcher behind the plate who can call a good game, perhaps he's kind of the guy that those predictive stats, you know, don't really apply to just because of the way that he operates and the way that he pitches.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah. No, for sure. I think that I think he's going to succeed next year. I don't think that anyone's expecting that 3.13 ERA again, but I think he can be a good pitcher.
the thing I've been saying to people who have been, you know, upset with, you know, the Blue Jays getting Jesse Chavez and being like, oh, this is, you know, what we're, you know, dumpster diving, this is what we're doing, yada, yada, yada. When Marco Estrada was acquired, everyone said, who is this guy? Like, what? He's not even going to be in the rotation. Like, what the hell? We're taking some, other team's flack, this and that. And then the guy got freaking Cy Young votes.
Yeah.
So, like, let's just give it a second to play out.
Yeah. And they're working with a great offense. I mean, I think the Blue Jays, I might have said this before, but the Blue Jays need to have not an A-plus offseason. They just need to have a solid offseason. They go out there, they add some pitching, both in the rotation and in the bullpen. They'll be fine. They have a really good offense. And it's not to say that they're going to win the East next year just because of that. But, you know, they should be among the leading contenders in the East. They should be right up there with the Red Sox, Yankees entering next season. And if they can have a little bit of a better offseason than that, maybe they really upgrade the pitching staff, then you're even looking at better chances of returning to the playoffs.
I think what's scary is if the Red Sox have a big offseason. If they go and get like a David Price and a Chris Davis or something like that, I think that's when you're like, oh, geez.
Yeah, for sure. But the Blue Jays already have a great offense, and they are a couple pieces away from having a solid pitching staff. You pair a great offense with a good defense, a solid pitching staff. All of a sudden, you're looking like a playoff team.
All right, let's wrap this up. Did we look over everything? And did we look over anything?
I think we're set.
We're good. I still can't talk. I had gum graft surgery, I cannot. I'm having trouble with the talking, which is bad when you host a podcast.
Yes.
Funnily enough.
You're holding up well.
Interestingly enough. Yeah, I know. Seriously, I'm battling out here. I think we got to everything. Go to sportsnet.ca, read everything that's there. As always, Pitch Talks in London on Wednesday, November 25th. Come out and see us in London. We'll be there talking about just basically pretty much everything we just talked about. I think we'll just do pretty much straight Q&A.
Yeah, this was the dress rehearsal.
Yeah.
No, not at all. We usually find a way to have different discussions. And who knows? Maybe they'll have made a move by then, too.
You think so?
Well, I actually don't think so. Okay. I think this next week is going to be quiet. Because it's U.S. Thanksgiving and it's typically pretty quiet.
Yeah, it is typically pretty quiet. And like you said, with that, you know, non-tender deadline next week, I mean, that's hopefully that'll open things up and perhaps you'll see some movement and we'll have some more to talk about.
Exactly.
That's it for us. For producer Sam McKee at Sam_Alton_McKee on Twitter. I am Arden Zwelling at Arden Zwelling on Twitter. That's Ben Nicholson Smith. He is at B Nicholson Smith on Twitter. This is At The Letters. We're on sportsnet.ca. We're on iTunes. We are everywhere on the internet that you could possibly think we would be. Please like, share, favorite, and subscribe. Leave a review. Send us tweets. Do whatever you gotta do to participate in this. Thank you so much for coming along. We will see you someday soon on At The Letters.